Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Right Radio.
Nerd alert.
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 208 of Nerd Pride Radio. 208, you know what? I had a fact about how the 1969 Chevelle Nomad four-door wagon was 208 inches long, which is fascinating, right? But then I discovered that I have exactly 208 Potomatics left on my list. For episode 208. We're not going to get through all of them. No, don't get your hopes up. But still, pretty cool. All right. Now you need to ask me how I'm doing today.
How are you
doing, bud? Thank you for asking. I am so much better. Oh, my goodness. Earlier today, I was here and getting set up and stuff, and my computer was broken, and so I needed to take it apart and fix it. It was just the charging plug. But anyway, I got done with all of that, and I'm, like, trying to work out the show notes for today, and I just felt so down, I couldn't even stand it. I mean, I was just depressed, and I didn't know why. And finally, you go, because I'm running through things in my head that, okay, no, I'm not worried about money. No, I don't have anything that's due at work that I'm forgetting about. No, I don't have, I'm trying to think of all the things. And then I realized, oh, you know what happened this morning? We had donuts for breakfast, and I ate two of them, two whole donuts. And then, following the two whole donuts for breakfast, when it came around to lunchtime, we had seen in the store that they had pizza bites, little Totino's pizza rolls, those things. And they had those at the store, except these were stuffed with macaroni and cheese and bacon. And so, naturally, we had to try them. And they're not bad, but here's the thing. Two donuts and then, these carb-packed mac and cheese pizza rolls. And that's all I had eaten all day. And I realized, oh God, no, I'm just going into a sugar coma here. That's what my problem is. And so, a little bit of coffee and a little bit of beef jerky later. And, I feel great. It's been a couple hours since then, but still, I feel great. So this is going to be a great day. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week is Valkyrie. Oh, man, we just saw Thor. And it was great. I mean, Hiddleston and Hemsworth, they're great as they always are. Tessa Thompson's Valkyrie, completely badass. Even Jeff Goldblum's very, very Goldblum-y Grandmaster, super entertaining. Cate Blanchett was just stunning, perfectly cast as Hela. And I'm telling you, you watch Hulk go all out in the arena, just incredibly satisfying. This was just fun. Just great popcorn fun, very funny movie, very Guardians-esque with all of its space weirdness. We had a great time. So anyway, oh, and when you see Thor, or if you've already seen Thor, just remember that Surtur, the king of the fire giants, yeah, remember that he's voiced by Mr. Krabs. Oh, so good. Clancy Brown, he's awesome. All right. Anyway, let's see. You know what? Let's just go straight to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. That's right. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Straight into the master list? It's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. First off, speaking of games, it's almost Deadpool time. So for those of you who want to get in on the Nerd Pride Deadpool for 2018, start getting your list together now because it's already November. And we usually do the draft sometime during the last week of the year. So, you know, sometime after Christmas, we will be doing our draft and getting everyone's lists organized. So if you are interested, then put together your list of, 30 or 40 celebrities that you think are going to die in the next year in order, and then submit it to me, and you can be part of this. So there you go. I've already got my list halfway done. I am excited. I've got some new names, some stuff. I actually did a little research, just a little bit. Not like my wife does research, because she's like thorough and stuff. I'm hoping she's been super busy at school and kind of stressed out. With any luck, maybe she won't have time to get to her list, and then we can kick her ass this year. But although you're not even winning this year, who's at the top of the list this year? Kyle's got it this year. Oh man, yeah, Kyle is running away with this thing this year. So anyway, Nerd Pride Deadpool's coming up, so get on it. But also, as long as I'm here, I am going to do a little war story from our game this week, because this was just too funny and too pathetic, really. We are playing Rise of the Rune Lords, and we have an opportunity to ask questions of a dead guy. And we've got this 10,000-year-old corpse, and we cast Speak with Dead on it, and we've got 22 questions that we can ask of the dead guy here. And, you know, he's got all the firsthand knowledge of all this stuff that's resurfacing and that we can go check into, and we don't really know what questions we want to ask, but man, we're going to get through this. And so we get through it. And finally, it got to one of the things that we've been really obsessed with is this tower. There's a tower that we're pretty sure was once an ancient weapon. It was a weapon mounted on the border between two ancient rival kingdoms. And this, we don't know how it operates. And so finally, as we're getting down to the end of our questions, we realize, oh, we should figure out about the tower. Let's ask about the tower. Let's see if we can get this sorted out. So, like, second to the last question, I'm just kibitzing here from the sidelines because I don't speak Thessalonian, Anna, our resident wizard, is asking the questions. And so she asks, do you know anything, or can you tell us anything about the tower in Sandpoint? And of course, he was alive 10,000 years ago. He has no idea what Sandpoint is because that's a recent city. And so he's like, I don't know what Sandpoint is. Oh, damn it. Okay. So we've got one question left. And finally, after a little bit of finagling, I got the wording because I'm trying to figure out what is he going to recognize. And so I said, okay, it's the tower weapons on the border between these two rival factions. And so basically, do you know how to activate these tower weapons on this border? And I write out the question. Anna copies and pastes it exactly as I wrote it, so this is all my fault. And the minute he hits send on it, you can just, I saw, oh God, it's a yes or no question. So sure enough, do you know how to activate these tower weapons? Yes. Oh, and then that's it. He's gone. God darn it. Like, that's how we ended our session. We gained a little bit of other information early on, but man, this one would have been really the prize. This would have been the feather in our cap if we could have gotten this one. And, we just phrased the question wrong. It was terrifying. And of course, DM Darks, who is so awesome normally, is just cackling. He's just laughing his fool head off because this was the best thing that could have happened to him all day. So there you go. That's our little trials and tribulations from this week's game. So anyway, even without that, we're going to figure it out. We'll get it all. But God, we were so close, so close. The very last question. So there you go. All right. That's it. Next up, Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. And if the first segment there, the gaming table, is any indication, and it is, these are all going to be pretty short today. So I could have kind of done this as a fingertips episode, I suppose. But, you know, I miss getting my segments in. So anyway, on the Science Corner today, my son Noah was asking a question about pumpkins, and specifically pumpkins and squash and this kind of stuff. He's asking how the plants are related. And hold on, my wife has a correction for me, I think. I shouldn't speak so soon. She didn't have a correction at all. This is a completely unrelated matter. So anyway, the question is about pumpkins and how it's related to squash, gourds, whatever. And so I did a little bit of research, and it turns out, I mean, very little bit. You only had to Google it once, and there it is. And I find out that pumpkins, gourds, squash, zucchini even, they're all not only related, they're all the same plant. Like literally the same species. Cucurbita pepo is the scientific name of it. And it, I mean, like patty pan squash, yellow summer squash, gourds, acorn squash, the pumpkins, the zucchini, straight neck, crook neck, I mean, all this stuff. This is, they're all the exact same plant, and they've just been bred in different ways to produce different fruits, much like we have, you know, Great Danes and Chihuahuas are all the same animal, even though they look amazingly differently. It's just different breeds of the same animal because we've bred them. Human intervention has bred them into so many very specific types. And so therefore, the exact same thing has happened with squash, gourds, whatever. This one plant produces all these different fruits because that's what we've come up with. Now, except what I learned this week is that you don't call them breeds of the same plant. You call them cultivars. So each one of these is a different cultivar of the Cucurbita pepo plant. There you go. And now, to be complete, not all gourds are from that same species. They're all Cucurbita, however you pronounce that. They're all from that same genus, but there's four others that are also cultivated by humans for foodstuffs. And of those four other ones, there are some of them that look like pumpkins, and thus they're just called pumpkins, and some of them that look like squash, and they're just called squash. And so, therefore, it doesn't actually even matter which species necessarily you're using. You name the plant according to what the fruit looks like when it's all done. So, there you go. Learn something this week. See, I told you this is going to be short. So, what's up next?
And now for something completely different.
Something completely different. Just stuff I don't have a category for yet. So, my job... I am a computer support technician for the state of Nebraska, and up until recently, I've worked for the Department of Health and Human Services. And so we've covered about 20 counties worth of northeast Nebraska. And through whatever initiative, we are now combining all of the computer support departments for all of the different state departments are all now combining into one single computer support group. And so therefore... instead of three of us out in our area now, we now have five because we've picked up, they had a couple of technicians from the Department of Roads, who are now part of our group. So we've expanded our capabilities. And we also, in addition to Department of Roads and, our own stuff, we're also covering, you know, the State Patrol. We're covering the Department of Revenue. We're covering, there's a bunch of stuff. Everything for the state of Nebraska that's out in this area. The reason we only picked up those two extra guys is all these other departments, they don't have computer technicians out in the field. They don't have support people. Everybody comes out of Lincoln, which means, you know, if you're 400 miles out in Scott's Bluff and something goes wrong with your computer, then you have to wait for a technician to get all the way out there, or you have to wait for them to mail you pieces, or you mail your computer back and then they send you a replacement or God knows what. But it terribly, horribly inefficient because, you know, like, my buddy Joel, who used to work for Parole, his office was just right around the corner from mine. And something happens to his machine, and it's like, you know, I could tell exactly what's wrong with it. I have the part that would fix it right here in my office. We're both state employees. I can't fix it because, well, he's not in my department. They just rent out this space. So therefore, he would have to wait a week for somebody to drive up from Lincoln, do everything he needed to do when I could have just had it done. I could have just fixed it and then, you know, whenever, mail me the part, whatever, I don't care, you know. But... So now, supposedly, we're going to be more efficient. This is going to be awesome. But this isn't the point of this story. The point of this story is I got to go out with one of the Department of Roads guys, and we go out on this big road trip, and mostly it's just, nothing big. We're just installing some monitors here and there. But it's a big round road trip where we're going to go in a big circle, and we're going to hit like 6 different offices, and it gives me a chance to see what the various field offices that they have are like, and, what kind of equipment's there, and meet some of the people. And so it's just, it's a getting to know you kind of trip. And that was great. And what I learned on this trip out, and this is just, I don't know if anyone else is going to be as excited about this as I was, but, it is how the Department of Roads, at least in the state of Nebraska, how the department divides up their labor, how they decide where their field offices are going to be, how many guys are assigned, and then what their workloads are. Everything that they do, everything out here for Department of Roads is based on where the snowplows go. It's all snowplow logistics, because that is, even though, snowplows, yeah, they go out a few times during the winter, but that is one of the more important functions that they have, is keeping the roads clear. And so therefore, every guy who is assigned to them, every man they have in the field, well, or women, although at this point, I don't believe there are any women working for them. But every employee they have, every person out there, gets the same number of miles of road that they have to maintain. So that when you take your snow plow out, you get your plow and you go out and you cover your set of roads. You go, all the way out, in the one lane, and you come back in the other lane. You've now cleared that road. And so everybody has exactly the same number of miles of road, so that they all, we're basically clearing as efficiently as possible, that we all get done at about the same time. And now we've cleared everything. And I thought that was really cool. And looking at the maps that they've got laid out and how they kind of finagle this as things change was just fascinating to me. It was kind of like, did you ever play Sim Tower, where in Sim Tower, the whole point of it was trying to figure out the elevators and how to line up your elevators and what kind of loads you needed to get to what areas. It felt a lot like that, it appealed to that sort of sensibility in me. And I just thought it was super cool. And so, he talked about how much trouble they had when, this one stretch of road that I love this stretch of road now, because they widened it out to 4 lanes. And how awesome is it that I can go 65 miles an hour there now? Traffic flows so much smoother. You can get where you're going faster. It cuts a lot of time out. But he said, here's the problem, is that they added in, 50 miles, that they pumped up to 4 lanes. Well, that's an extra 50 more miles of road, an extra 100 more miles of lanes that they put in. And so when they widened out that road, they didn't give them any more staff to cover it. And that's just one section. They've widened a whole bunch of stuff and pumped it up from 2 lanes to 4 lanes. And so every time they do that, they come around to the new year, and now it's time to, okay, well, now we have to reallocate everybody, because now we've got, from town A to town B, instead of, 30 miles of road there, there's now 60 miles of road there. It's still the same road, but more lanes. And so if you want to get the plows out and you want to get everything covered, now they rework the roads. And he said, so that's why, here's this one guy and he covers this far north, because, well, that's how you had to send him out to balance everything out. I thought it was fascinating. It was really, really cool. I loved the maps. I loved the whole bit. It was really cool. And the other thing that I hit while we were on this trip, and I don't know if I've had a talk with you guys about this before, but he mentioned something about we were talking about the GPS locators, because a lot of their road offices also have GPS waypoints for the federal government on them. And so they've got these GPS locators and their, specific points on the map. And I didn't do a whole lot of research onto GPS waypoints to figure out exactly what they meant in this context, because apparently waypoint can mean several things. But he talked about how at one point this whole system was down, something that they were doing, this whole part of the system was down, and it was somehow connected to the federal wiring that went in there. And when he talked about it being down, he said something about, yeah, apparently the report that came back after all this trouble that happened, it turns out there was a squirrel in the box. And the minute he said squirrel in the box, I laughed, because to me, I understand from people I know who have worked with electrical lines and big stuff like this, that squirrel in the box is what they tell people when they screwed up really bad. They went in and it just, it was just, a simple error, and all of a sudden, oh crap, you flipped the wrong switch or you hit the wrong thing and now power's down for for this whole section. It's going to take you 20 minutes to get it back up or whatever it's going to be. And when it's human error in that area, then they usually just report it as a squirrel in the box, which I thought was really funny. In fact, there was a news report that came out of California. I wish I'd written it down. It was from California, and they talked about this whole blackout area. And again, they reported a squirrel in the box. And I'm like, oh yeah, I know what that was. So anytime you see that, just think squirrel in the box. Yeah, that means someone who works for him screwed up really bad. That's what that is. So I wish I had that excuse the time that I took down the communications network for all of Northeast Nebraska. Yeah, that was pretty bad. Now, technically, it wasn't me. It was a contractor who was there doing some stuff for me, and he just plugged in these two boxes because they were right next to each other, and so he put in a little connection to connect the two boxes, and apparently that caused a feedback loop that took out the local hospital, it took out the local state patrol, it took out the... It was pretty bad, pretty ugly. So I wish I had had the presence of mind to just say squirrel in the box, but I didn't. That would have been cool. All right, anyway, that's the end of that. Now it's on to the Unnamed History segment.
Don't know much about history.
Okay, on the Unnamed History segment this week, this is the one I was going to do last week. I was listening to The Allusionist, which is a podcast about words, which is where I get all my history from. And they were talking about the word guy. And so it catches my attention because I just, been looking at words like guy and dude and man and other words like this that you use as a colloquial vocative, as it were. And so the origin of the word guy, because guy is a term for just a general male person, and now a general term that could mean any person, but usually male. And it is also a man's name. And so they're question for the Allusionist was, which came first? Was it a general term for people first, or was it a person first? And it turns out that it was a name first. And in fact, not only was it a name first, but the specific guy who lent his name to this term was Guy Fawkes. Yeah, how cool is that? It turns out that Guy Fawkes, part of the gunpowder plot in England several hundred years ago, when the whole Catholic versus Protestant division in England was much more heated than it is today, and he was a member of a group of Catholics who were very upset that this was after Elizabeth, because Elizabeth, Henry VIII had changed the country to Protestant, and then his son came along, and then Mary was very Catholic, and then Elizabeth was Protestant, but she was also very tolerant of Catholics, and so therefore didn't make as much of an issue about it. And so it comes around to her successor, James, maybe? I can't remember. I think it was James. He was going to cement this as a Protestant nation, and apparently they were worried that he was going to be very, very gung-ho about persecuting the Catholics. And so they came up with the gunpowder plot. And the gunpowder plot, for those who aren't familiar with it, it was a plan to... First, they rented out a storage space underneath Parliament, which is amazing that they were even allowed to rent out storage space underneath Parliament, but they did. And these conspirators planned to bring in, well, not just planned, they actually did bring in a crap ton of gunpowder. They packed this storage space underneath Parliament with as much gunpowder as they could fit in there, and then cleverly hidden under lots of coal and firewood. So they've got the gunpowder, they've got the coal, they've got the firewood, and then they've got Guy Fawkes sitting there with a slow match ready to set the whole thing off. And this was, a pretty good plan, because had they actually carried it out, they would have taken out the king and Parliament, because this was opening day of Parliament for that year. And so they would have gotten the king, they would have gotten pretty much all of Parliament, they would have gotten most of the lead clergy for the Church of England. They would have, this would have really, cut the head off of the authority in England at the time. And the problem was some of them got a little, I don't know, felt a little guilty maybe because there would be some Catholics, innocent Catholics who would be there in Parliament at the time and would get caught up in this. And most of them felt that, well, yeah, but this is the price we pay for our freedom. But some people got cold feet, and therefore, a Lord Monteagle, who was one of the Catholic lords, who was going to be there that day, received an anonymous letter, clearly from one of the conspirators, that says, dude, you might want to not be in Parliament this day because they're going to suffer a mighty blow that day. That was the code message, is that, you know, hey, maybe you want to spend some time out in the country that day. That's all we're saying. And so Lord Monteagle, was a Netflix and chill. Good idea, honey. So Lord Monteagle, took it upon himself to show the letter to the king because that was the kind of guy he was. And thus they figured something was up and they go to investigate. And, what they find is Guy Fawkes just leaving the room full of gunpowder and coal and firewood with his matches and his watch, because that was, again, going to be his job. He had gone down to there, double check everything, and they wind up catching Guy Fawkes there. Everybody else finds out that the authorities are investigating, and they all beat feet out of town as quick as they could. But Guy was actually there on site with the gunpowder. And presumably they asked him, so what's with all the gunpowder? And his response was to blow all you Scotch bastards back where you came from. Because apparently, he wasn't going to even pretend. He was like, yeah, because we were going to blow the crap out of you. So Guy Fawkes gets caught. Now, as a result, the king decided that we were going to celebrate the gunpowder, plot every single year. We were going to have a celebration because the whole point of the celebration is to show that God favored the king and favored the rightful government of England by revealing this plot and keeping them all safe from these horrible conspirators. And thus, we will celebrate the day every year with a festival. And the festival involves lots of fireworks, and it involves, well, not so much fireworks as bonfires. When you go to one of these, it was very common to have effigies of people that you would either throw on the fire, or you would hang, or you would... what you do with effigies. And so the most popular effigy was effigies of Guy Fawkes because, yeah, he may not have been the head of the conspiracy, but he was the guy who got caught. He was the first one. I mean, they tracked down all the others eventually. But Guy was the face of the conspiracy. And so, it got to the point where you would bring your effigy, and it just got to the point where Guy became a term for an effigy in general. And they just called them guys. And then, from there, Guy then evolves to a term for anyone who is shabby looking, anyone who's dirty, unkempt, basically someone who looks like they could be an effigy. And so that guy became a more generalized term at that point. And then somehow, when the American colonies brought Guy over to this continent, we changed it from a shabby person to just any dude. And so that was the American twist on the word guy, is that we changed it to just be an everyman. So there you go. That, at least from this particular podcast and their research, that is supposedly the origin of the word guy as a generalized term. It actually came from Guy Fawkes. I was surprised. And I also thought that was super cool. So there you go. All right. Next up. Oh. Get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right, it's time for some nerd rage. Oh, all right. My nerd rage, this I just came up with as I was putting the show notes together. This just popped into my head. So, you know what I don't need, seriously, since I was interested in Thor and I was looking up some stuff about the movie and about Ragnarok and all this, what I don't need is another article telling me the 10 ways that Marvel got Norse mythology wrong. Yeah, I know. I know that the superhero Thor is nothing like the actual god Thor from mythology. You don't have to spell that out for me. yes, they've taken some liberties, really? You don't have to, oh man, or articles about what the Avengers should really look like, because the movies aren't like the comics. Therefore, you know, if they were doing it correctly, this is what you'd be seeing on screen. Seriously? Or the Game of Thrones characters, or the, yeah, I'm tired of people having to point out that different media and different versions of the same property treat things a little bit differently, and somehow the first version is the quote-unquote right version, and everybody else is wrong, and they need to, and again, it's just clickbait. I don't even know why I would get upset about it. It's just clickbait. But man, every time I see it, it's like, who cares? So what? So they're different. I don't care. You know what? Here's the deal. I went to go see the latest movie version of It, and which I really, really liked, as I've mentioned. And you know what was, you know, was not in this movie? There was no scene of a child gangbang orgy. Really? Wow. I can't believe they left that out. Does that make it wrong? No, I think that was the good move. Seriously? In fact, even, and I don't know if this is true, I'm hearing this secondhand, thirdhand, but someone told me that they saw an interview with Stephen King where he said that including that sex scene in the original book was one of the biggest mistakes he's ever made in his writing, is that, yeah, he had some reasons for it and some points he was trying to make, but that it really just comes across as exploitative and gratuitous, and therefore he shouldn't have done it in the first place. That's what I hear. So, and I would agree with him. The scene was jarring and terrible. So, look, you know what? Movies are not comic books. There are lots of things that can happen in comic books that don't translate well into a movie, and vice versa. A movie gives you different abilities as a director and a writer. It gives you different things that you can portray, and therefore, the story is going to be different. You know, books, written media give you a lot of internal monologue that doesn't translate well to the big screen, and so therefore, you have to have ways to show those internal voices. You have to be able to show that same information and convey it on in a visual medium. So they're different. So what? Ugh. All right. Anyway. Again, it's just clickbait. I don't know why I get upset. So there you go. And then that's it. That is the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. So it's now time to move on to the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Fried Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you guys come in. If you want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And my first number here is 11, and 11 is from Zimny. Hello, Zim. Zimny says, actually, you know, I say Zimny, and then I shorten it to Zim. It's actually Zimny Pot. I just never wrote all that down because I'm lazy. Zimny says, you've been asked to run a gothic horror one-shot, like Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff, he puts in quotes. You have about 2 hours to prepare yourself before the session starts. What do you do to set the proper tone and mood? Okay, I think in my preparing for it, all right, first off, my wife is suggesting that actually locate it somewhere kind of spooky. All right, we have a local cave here in town that I don't think I could get access to given only 2 hours, but I could go out to my in-laws' place, and they've got an old barn up there that is appropriately windy and creaky and kind of spooky on its own. Get some low lighting out there, just enough to play by. So you've already got that set up. And then I think for me, I'm not much for playing soundtracks, and having actual, you know, recorded, music and noise and that kind of stuff for my games. I know that some people can use that quite effectively. I can't, but I would be using my time for, my plan is going to be, the Scooby Gang or whoever my heroes are going to be, is investigating the haunted location where there are rumors of, you know, X monster. It doesn't matter. All right. This is all standard fare. And then once they get into that thing, what I would use my time to prepare for is start thinking of spooky setups for them so that I can describe the lighting and describe the sounds, the creaking, pick a background noise that is like kind of ever present, something that I can go back. Again, I always think of the drums from the Kobold Adventure where it was a Goblin Adventure when I ran it, but they're down in the Goblin's Lair and they keep getting these drums in the background. And so you get the constant beat of those drums. And as a dungeon master, whenever they're chit-chatting amongst themselves and trying to figure out what they want to do, I'm just over there just making the drum noise, you know, getting some kind of background stuff like that. I think you combine that with actually setting up a table, like I say, put it out in the old barn. Get out there just after sundown and set up in the old barn, and it would be that would be the kind of stuff that I would be getting ready for. If I was only given 2 hours, that's the kind of stuff I'd be getting ready. And then, you know, with only 2 hours, the rest of it, the plot, would be very generic at first, but I don't know. I've still got another hour and 55 minutes to plot this out, so I would come up with something else to put a twist on it. But yeah, that would be the basics of it. 26. And this one's from Kyle. Kyle says, any word on Starfinder? Thoughts? Are there Brusk? Okay, Starfinder is the new role-playing game from Paizo. It's Pathfinder set in space, and it is pretty wicked awesome. And I have not played as much as I want to. We've only gotten 2 sessions in now with the kids, and we're working through the first adventure path, but just we've been busy. So are there Vrusk? No, not yet, but you could certainly put them in. There's plenty of room for them. There's all sorts of weird and freaky stuff. There is a Book of Aliens that is supposed to be out right now. I just haven't picked it up yet. I'm expecting to probably get it for Christmas, but we'll see. But there can be anything you want in it, really, and it would be really easy to do. So, sorry, I don't know anything more than that, but yeah, it's pretty darn cool. 53. And 53 is... It's from Phoebe. All right. Hey, Phoebe. How many total paranoia adventures have you run in the online/email format? Do you remember which one was the bloodiest? They're all pretty bloody. Grand total, I have run, I want to say 8, maybe? I've got 2 of them that never finished, which I am still disappointed about. But then, I've had at least 6 now that have finished, so maybe I'm either on my 8th or my 9th one now. All right, which one was the bloodiest? The one with the highest death total would have been the first one, the Mark IV adventure. In that one, I had 6 players, and all 6 of them either lost all of their clones or got down to their last clone by the very end. And in fact, at least 1 character, maybe 2, lost all of their clones early enough that they then were issued another clone and another character, and they lost 1 or 2 clones on that one. So I think Mark IV had a grand total of 50 to 52 deaths, maybe something like that. It was a lot of death. So that was the highest body count. Now, the bloodiest, as in the most gruesome? I don't know. I've gotten a little more creative in how people die, but I mean, there's a lot of laser shots. There's a lot of getting squished by falling objects. There's a lot of, but yeah, the highest death count was definitely the Mark IV. 82. And 82 is from Talvin. Hey, Talvin. Talvin says, you are allowed to visit Antarctica, but you have to stay there for 6 months. Do you go? No, not for 6 months. Not at this point in my life, and probably not at any point. I would love to visit Antarctica. I would love to even have a vacation of sorts where I spend a couple weeks there. I could see spending a couple weeks, or maybe at a different time of my life, maybe even spending a month in Antarctica. But I think after a while, you know, Antarctica is a little limited on its opportunities at times. So, 6 months is definitely way too long to spend in Antarctica. That's, but, you know, I would love to visit it. That would be so cool to say you've been to it. You've seen, it would be really cool. I would love doing that. So, yeah, that's right. You know what? Come visit us in Nebraska over the winter and just hunker down during a blizzard here. And, you know, it's the same thing, right? It's pretty close. I'm pretty sure. I mean, okay, negative 40, negative, what do they get down to down there? Negative 100? I don't know. But we're close. We're right up there, I think. 24. And 24 takes me to, oh, there it is. It's Talvin again. Talvin says, what has been your favorite moment so far playing Dothan? Hopefully you picked this question before the end of our Rune Lords campaign. Well, yes, I did. Here it is. My favorite moment playing Dothan. There's been a lot. There's been a lot of role play moments that, have just been, not as flashy or spectacular, but have been just quietly nice. I've liked that. The one morning where, her uncle Ilion was going through so much trouble and she kind of, you know, just being helpful and helped get him up in the morning and used her magic to kind of clean him up and make him presentable. And it was just a quiet little touch that I enjoyed. I mean, my favorite single moment is probably at the top of the clock tower. We had gotten to the top of the clock tower and we were way out of our depth and we were unprepared for the Lamia that we were fighting up there. And there was every reason to believe that all of us should have gotten wiped out, that we should have had, you know, bodies being tossed off the top of this place and falling to our deaths because we weren't even smart enough to bring a feather fall with us. That, I mean, it was pretty serious. And, by sheer luck, I mean, Dothan cast a single spell that wound up incapacitating her. And the idea of getting through her magic resistance, and also her failing the saving throw for it. And I mean, the moments were, everything came together just right. And Dothan wound up being, the hero of the moment. And it was, I think, the first time that I felt, really directly, heroic as a character with her. Because, I mean, look, we had done lots of stuff before that. And Dothan's always, she's always been in there. And I understand that, yes, you know, her support services, that she provides in the way of her morale boosting, her song, the damage bonuses, she does a lot of stuff. And it is really, really useful. And I get that. It's very important the way this group functions. But this was the first time that she took a direct action that I just was really thrilled with. Although, you know what? God, even then, her goofing around in the haunted house, the entire haunted mansion business was actually really good. With her being a wisdom 3 idiot in there, actually wisdom 5 at the time, but just her being an idiot about stuff in there, the way the haunts got different people, it wasn't just her, it was everybody in there. It was a good scene. Overall, I mean, we've just had a great campaign, we really have. There's been a lot of good stuff, but I'm going to stick with the clock tower. I got that one. 27 is also from Talvin for the hat trick. All right, Talvin says, have you ever considered running for political office? Let's see. I have thought about the idea of it. I have never seriously entertained it. I mean, I've thought about it in the same way I've thought about, hey, how would I prepare myself if I was going on the Hot Ones interview show where they have to eat all the hot wings while being interviewed. You know, I've thought about running for office in that same kind of hypothetical. God, if I did run for office, what would I do? I'm not like I'm seriously actually going to do it, on any level, at least not at this point in my life. But what would your platform be if you did? Well, that's a hard one to say. It depends on what office I'm running for. If I was actually going to run for office, it would be for something like a local school board or it would be something like that. Some local issue where, I see problems that need to be addressed and I have specific ideas in my head of how I think those could be, worked on. And so my platform, if you would even call it a platform, would depend on what I was, what it was that motivated me to run in the first place. So I can't say specifically. But, you know, like I say, the most likely scenario I would see would be becoming a school board member, and thus, well, to me, it would be, you know, working to improve our schools and to ensure that we have the money we need to accomplish these specific goals for, you know, but it would depend on what's going on. I have no idea for sure. 06 is from Talvin again. My God, you'd think he was Kyle with all this. That's great. All right. Talvin says, what is one book you think should be required reading for everyone, and why? Oh, man, I wish I'd prepared for this question, because that's deep. My wife's over my shoulder saying To Kill a Mockingbird, which I have to agree with her on. I did not read To Kill a Mockingbird when I was in school. I know it's required reading just about everywhere, but I moved around enough that I missed some required reading along the way. Just, you know, when you change schools every 2 years, you're bound to hit one where it was on the wrong schedule. And so there are certain things like Romeo and Juliet that I got twice, but, you know, other things that I missed out on completely. But To Kill a Mockingbird is a good one. I just read it a few years ago because one of my kids was doing it for school, and I love that book. Absolutely love it. But also, there's things recently that I've picked up, kids' books that I think are really powerful. And I mean, and these are ones that are being made into movies now. So, The Giver is a great book, and I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know anything about it yet. I don't know if it lives up to the book, but the book was spectacular. The book Wonder. Oh, if you haven't read Wonder, go read Wonder. Read the book before you see the movie, because the movie actually puts a face on him. And, I've seen the ads for it, and I'm a little disappointed with the face. I liked it better when the face was left to our imagination of what we might or might not be looking at here. But Wonder is a wonderful book. Absolutely wonderful. Those are really good. So, I mean, yeah, To Kill a Mockingbird is already required reading, but, these others, maybe they will someday. I wouldn't be surprised. It's the kind of thing that they have, it's good literature that also has a good message. And, I find it really powerful. So anyway, 18. And the fair dice are really wanting to roll low today, aren't they? 18. Hey, that's from Kaz. All right, Kaz says, tell us your favorite barbecue sauce. Know that we will judge you if you choose poorly. Oh, okay, no, this one's easy. My dad makes his own barbecue sauce, and it is spectacular. You have never had barbecue sauce as good. Now, my problem with it is he's given me the recipe, and when we got the recipe for it, something was messed up in translation. And so we wound up making it ourselves, and we were very careful about it. And we got way too much salt in it. I think we wound up getting tablespoons instead of teaspoons. And we double-checked the recipe. This is what it said. But I think there was something in the translation when it was sent to us that somewhere it got transcribed wrong. And it was way too salty, and we never did try it again because it's something my dad does. But we should try again. But in addition to my dad's barbecue sauce, which is awesome, there was a local restaurant here called the Double K. And the Double K was a chicken place, easily identifiable by the giant-ass chicken out on top of the restaurant. I mean, this thing was huge. And so Double K had the greatest barbecue sauce. I mean, it was really wonderful. And then they went out of business. And they closed down, and we thought, oh, God, it's lost forever. And then we found out that, no, the recipe got sold to another local restaurant that was operating. It was actually kind of a bar, but it was attached to a buffet place. And so we would go in there, you know, every 6 months, every 8 months, and we would order a gallon of their barbecue sauce. And that's what we'd take home, and we'd have it available for us. And loved that. That was the greatest stuff. And then that place shut down. And then fortunately, even though the buffet place shut down for family personal reasons, the little bar on the side reopened as a barbecue place in the mall where, okay, we never go there for food because, you know, it's in the mall and we don't go there for food very often. But they still sell the barbecue sauce. So we can still get that from there. So, so the answer to this question is my dad or Double K. You can judge me if you want, but I'm going to stick by those. 75 from Kyle. Hey, Kyle. Kyle says, quick, what's your favorite monster from the original Monster Manual? Succubus. There you go. Just like the picture. All right, there you go. Now, do an impression of that monster telling a joke. I can't, no. Ah, oh, darn it. See, I should have said Treant, because Treant was the other one that I also really liked, and I don't think I ever used the Treant but once, but I always loved them as the idea of that they weren't necessarily evil, but there were all sorts of ways that you could run afoul of Treants being in the woods. God, I should have used them. So, I'm going with it. I'm going to tell my joke as a Treant. All right, you ready? And this is going to be my best impression. I can't quite get the deep, gravelly, tree beard intonations from Lord of the Rings, but you get the gist. All right, here we go.
How do you keep a human in suspense?
Number 62. Number 62. Thank you, Lisa. My wife appreciates my humor, even if you guys don't. All right. Number 62 is also from Kyle. Kyle says, what's your filing system? I recently went through 3 bankers' boxes of paper that I'd kept for the last 20 years and threw most of it away, scanned much of it, which I store online, and kept only certain things, shot records, diplomas, sentimental things. I reduced 3 boxes to 1 large folder. What you got going on? All right. My filing system is I used to keep a hold of the bills save bills for, 6 months or so, just to make sure that, in case there's any question about what's going on with the bills, you've got a record of what you think you did with them, which, 6 months is plenty, because in general, if there's no issue, then the next month and then the month after are all going to reflect that, yes, things are still going exactly as they're supposed to. So, I would keep hold of those, although I've just recently finally gone to, having almost all of my bills are being withdrawn automatically from my bank account. So therefore, I went to pay bills this last month and I had to go online and send some money over to the garbage guys. And that was it. Everything else is taken care of. So I'm not even keeping that stuff anymore, as a record. Most of it is in, online billing and this kind of stuff. But most of our important papers, I do have a folder that I keep, that has some important papers in it, but a lot of the most important stuff, again, like shot records and social security cards and birth certificates and most of this other stuff, I scan it. I keep it online. I keep it backed up because, immunization records, every single time I need them, even though we've got a place for them, this never seems to be in the right spot, or it takes us too long to find stuff. And once I have it all online, it's all easy. So for the most part, yeah, I've got a single folder. Although it also, maybe it just winds up in the junk drawer. That's where it's not really junk, except it is, where, if I've got important stuff that I don't want to lose, I just drop it here. It's in my dresser. So maybe I'll find it there, but most of it, no, I try and scan it and just keep it online. That way it's always right at my fingertips, no matter where I am. So that's me. 48 comes from, oh, so close. There we go. 48 is from Talvin. Talvin says, what is your favorite fast food restaurant? Taco John's. Me and my wife love Taco John's. The kids could care less, but I love Taco John's. I will go And I will get their Mexi rolls, which is the same as the old Amigos crisp meat burritos. I love the Mexi rolls. So Mexi rolls, and then get their tater tot style potatoes are called there. A little nacho cheese for dipping them into. Awesome. I love Taco John's. And our Taco John's, here in town, got closed down 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe even longer than that. It's been a while. It got shut down several years ago. And the rumor, and I don't know that there's any validity to this, the rumor is that they were dealing meth out of the back of the restaurant. My wife says, no, there's no truth to that. And yeah, it's one of those stories that goes around. A restaurant suddenly shuts down it's because they were dealing meth. Or the other one could have been because, you know, they were butchering stray animals or something like that. That's another popular rumor when restaurants shut down. But this is Taco John's. What would they do with them? I mean, they get all their stuff prepackaged, right? So, that's right, because we had our local panda garden closed down for a while, and I think it's reopened now, but it's not. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. Our panda garden shut down, and then we saw an online article that they had gone into the panda garden and found the freezer had coyotes in it that someone had killed and were strung up in there, that they were apparently buying meat from weird places. And I'm thinking, oh, how terrible. This can't possibly even be true. And it turns out that I don't know if the story was true or not, but it wasn't our panda garden. It was a panda garden in Canada. So it just happened to be a Chinese restaurant with the same name. But anyway, don't know if it was true or not. Just know that that was the story that was being reported. But anyway, Taco John's closed down and it reopened as another less good Mexican restaurant. We tried going there and it was just terrible. Now that restaurant has shut down and we are told that they're reopening it as a Taco John's any moment now. Like the trucks are there, they're remodeling, they're fixing that stupid, swimming pool of a parking lot they have in the back. Because their main parking lot is fine, but then in the back you go through the drive-through and they tried to do that clever thing where they do two drive-through lanes and the second lane was consistently underwater. Like there was just no drainage from it and it was terrible. But they're getting everything fixed up and supposedly it's opening as a Taco John's again. So I'm super excited. It's about time I got some Taco John's because otherwise the nearest one to us is like 50 miles away. 42. I read it backwards. 42 is from Mrs. Darks. Hey there, Sarah Beth. And she says, what was the first time you and Lisa were away from the boys overnight? How old were they? Oh, duh. Jacob was little, I'm sure. I don't know how old, but she's got her hand up, so I'm sure she knows. Let me ask her. Hold on. Okay. Well, for an overnight trip, I mean, like the first time we left him at all would have been when we went out to the movies. I think my mom was there to watch him or we took him out to Grandma and Grandpa's. I can't remember. But we went out to see a movie, Legends of the Fall, in fact. And that was the first time that we left him at all. But, I think the first time for an overnight trip, and Lisa just said it and I think she's right. We went canoeing for our second anniversary. So Jacob would have been 7 months old, 6 months old, something like that, 6 months. So he would have been 6 months old and we would have left him with Grandma and Grandpa while we went out and went canoeing, down the Niobrara, leaving from Valentine. So, you know, it's like a 3-hour drive from our house and, we had a really good time too. So our first anniversary, we went to the zoo. Second anniversary, we went canoeing. So there you go. But yeah, that's it. 02. 02 comes from Blue Devil. Hey, Andrew. And this is number 13. There we go. All right. Blue Devil says, if you could single-handedly pass an amendment to the Constitution, what would it be? Oh, man. Something about equal rights and non-discrimination? I don't know. I mean, is it, equal pay for equal work? Is that rebuilding the election process to get rid of the Electoral College and make more sense out of how we put people in power? Something about gerrymandering. I don't know. Redesign the education system. I have no idea. I mean, there's just so many different things that could be done, and I don't know which one needs to be, which of those is it important to actually lock down as an amendment to the Constitution, to lock it down as an absolute right or an absolute in general that can't be violated. Very dangerous to make amendments. I mean, necessary at times, but also, again, potentially very dangerous because, once it's there, it's set in stone. So very difficult to overturn. So I'm not sure. But, boy, there's lots of good ideas. I'm going to just be wishy-washy and leave it at that. Number 14. 14 comes from Kaz. And Kaz says, which do you punch first? A Nazi goat or a Stalinist llama? Oh. All right. If I am required to punch one of these animals, I will clearly punch the Nazi goat first, but, cause it's also, probably smaller than me. And thus, I will be, less likely to get, well, although goats can be pretty vicious. Ugh. I don't know. Here's the thing. It's not the goat's fault it's a Nazi. I mean, it's a goat. I just saw a bit online that said, hey, bad news, Nazi kittens are just as adorable as regular kittens. That's how they get you. It's just a goat. So, I mean, you're really asking me, am I going to punch a goat or a llama? I would prefer not to punch either because, I like them. I think they're both, I like goats better than llamas though. So, I think I'd take my chances with the goat before I punch the llama. I don't know enough about llamas to know whether or not I feel safe doing that. So there you go. Last one. Number 90. And 90 is, there it is. It's from Kyle. And Kyle says, okay, you have to pick a person that will now be your personal horse for the rest of your life. You will ride on their backs on a saddle forever. It will not cause them discomfort or pain to walk around on all fours with you. They will be capable of doing it. They will feel like it's an honor to be your horse. Who do you pick and why? I refuse to pick. Why? Why would I do that? I mean, look, if anybody, no, I can't because I'm taking them away from their life. Because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, look, if I have to pick somebody, Kyle, I'll pick you. Because, hey, you're good conversation. I'd love having you around as long as you don't mind doing it. We're all cool with that. But then you wouldn't be around your kids. So, that would be horrible. I couldn't do that to somebody. I mean, if I have to pick, obviously, it's going to be you. But I don't want to do that to you. That sounds terrible. Terrible. All right, we'll do one more. 95 is from Blue Devil again. And Blue Devil says, what is your favorite game played with an ordinary deck of playing cards? I really like Hearts. I like Crazy Eights. I like Solitaire. At least when I was a kid, I liked Crazy Eights. Now you have Uno, so who needs Crazy Eights? But yeah, Hearts is probably my favorite game. And I like playing Solitaire, but when it comes down to playing with a regular deck of cards, Solitaire turns out to be super slow when you have to deal those out. You get so spoiled playing it online. Playing it on the computer, everything's just so quick and easy. You don't have to shuffle. You don't have to do nothing. Whereas playing Hearts with a deck of cards, well, then it's all worth it because, you've got the camaraderie. You've got people around the table. I really enjoy that. So anyway, there. That was my answer. I'm all done. I'm going to turn it over to GLaDOS, and she's going to give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by Mr. William Shatner. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, and Nerd Pride Radio itself, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, then you can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write us a nice review, or write us a really crappy, awful review. It doesn't matter. As long as you give me 5 stars, that's what makes the difference. But if you want to do something super nice for me, seriously, recommend Nerd Pride Radio to your friends. Just one friend, one. This week, that's all I'm asking. Because if you're enjoying it, seriously, spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well, because word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Pod-O-Matic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me. Save me all of this grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, you send me a message, and then we'll hang out together. We'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out onto the internet, to my website and to Facebook, and I post up, hey guys, I'm recording. Anything people want to add, I will read it off at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. I'm going to start with my website, my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And, okay, see, I recognize my mistake immediately. It is in how you've posed the question. Because normally I put up listener betrayal and everyone knows that, hey, it's listener betrayal. Just post up whatever you want and I'll read it off. But, you know, I'm also thinking of adding, you know, questions and topics and maybe guiding things a little bit so we have sort of a theme. And so, I posted up listener betrayal 208. Who saw Thor? Okay. I asked a simple question. I didn't ask them to explain or expand. And so my responses are, not me, from Aliahad. Pick me. I just got home from seeing it. That's from Blue Devil. And then, not I, says Talvin. And, yeah, you could have elaborated more, guys. I'm just saying. It's my fault for a poorly phrased question. That's what I'm saying. I should have expanded and given you guys some more detail. I should have learned, from our Speak with Dead session at the last game, but I didn't. I'm really bad at this. However, Aliahad, being my friend, did give me the, hey, how you feeling, buddy? You've had it rough. Yeah, still, it's this nagging cough. It's this, here's the thing. What I need to do is I need to take my Mucinex and use the inhaler, and I need to do that reliably twice a day, every day for a week or so until finally my lungs are clear. But my problem is, I take my Mucinex and I use the inhaler, and then after a day, I feel pretty good. And then I forget that maybe I should continue taking it. And so then I skip it for a day, and then my lungs start to feel a little junky again. So I'm just a really bad patient. That's what my problem is. But I'll get better at it. I'm determined now. I will be really good about this. And then Aliahad continues with, why'd I call you buddy? I never call anyone buddy. Oh, because that's what you do when you're trying to comfort someone slightly condescendingly, I suppose. Oh, how you doing, buddy? Yeah, see? It's just a term of endearment. It's cool. We're fine with that. All right, and then that's it. That's all I got for my forums. But let me head on out to Facebook and see what we got here. And, okay, here we go. This one I did expand. I said, now recording episode 208, he posted optimistically with the hope that some friends might reply and contribute to his podcast. And so they did. The first one is from Iantha, and Iantha says, when leaving a job due to grievances with the administration, to write a letter to the doctors or not? chances of real change happening because of it are low to none, then if you feel that the chances of actually affecting a change here are slim to none, like the letters really aren't going to do any good, then I would skip doing it if you felt that there might be any repercussion to you in terms of what kind of recommendation you get, what people are going to say when they call the company afterwards. Because if very little can come of it, and it might possibly be in some way, you know, come back on you for something, then not worth your time. If you think something might come of it, or if you think it will just make you feel really good to have written it, then, you know what, there's also the possibility you could just write the letters and then not send them. That, a lot of times that's very cathartic in itself. You should try that one. But, or, you know, maybe, you know, you and Paul could just get a movie and some takeout and just relax and have a good time instead. You know, possibility. All right, next is from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, hey, Mike, you missed us last week, huh? Sorry about that. What did you do to appreciate the redheads in your life today? Is today Redhead Appreciation Day? Because I had not noticed. Did you remind Aiden not to call us gingers at least? Actually, yes, just in the last few days. Maybe it was about a week ago. But yes, I have just recently, he made some reference to a friend of his who is a redhead and called him a ginger. And I mentioned that, you know, some redheads find that term offensive. And then we had a whole discussion about why. And the younger kids were with us, so they got to hear it. So there, I'm spreading your word for you. She continues. Also, why do redheads have to share a day with Guy Fawkes Day? Wait a minute. Are you shitting me? Is today Guy Fawkes Day? Is it on the 5th of November? Yes, today is Guy Fawkes Day. Oh my God. Okay. Let's just imagine that I did an entire section, a historical section on Guy Fawkes because I knew it was Guy Fawkes Day today. Let's just imagine that that's how that worked out. Oh my God. I'm a freaking idiot. You would think that having started the section, having started talking about Guy Fawkes earlier, you would think at some point during that, I would have ran the song through my head and would have noted that it's the 5th of November because it says so right here on my computer. You would, oh my God. Okay. You're right. That is really grossly unfair that you have to share it with Guy Fawkes. Terrible, Sarah Beth. Is that a dig on our fiery tempers? No, pure coincidence. Anyway, happy 5th of November or for whatever you wish to celebrate today. Ah, thank you. All right. God damn it, I feel stupid. Stop laughing over there. Oh, God. Okay. Sarah Beth then posts again and says, also, I just saw another shooting happen today. I do not want to start a uncomfortable topic, but now I feel like a schmuck for my flippant betrayal above. No, because life still goes on. And I have heard that there was a shooting today in Texas, I believe, at a church. 20 people dead? I don't know any other details at this point. I have not done any looking at all. I'm just hearing secondhand what the headline says. And here's the problem is, we have, people die of gun violence every single day, in this country, and people die of horrible mass shootings that may or may not be terror related or may or may not be politically motivated or whatever. Those are happening on a regular basis as well. But you know, we have far more people die from guns than from mass shootings in any given week in this country. Far more people die of car accidents than they do of mass shootings. And not to say that mass shootings are not important, and not saying that they're not relevant. They are. This is absolutely an important issue that needs to be addressed. But we also have people die from lots of things all the time, things that could and should be addressed by our society at large in some way. And we also still have to go on. I was amazed that the response from New Yorkers after the last terror attack, I don't mean to chuckle, but it's a guy that was, where was it I saw it? It was one of the evening news shows where it was, you know, no less than three guys in chicken suits still out trick-or-treating and doing their Halloween celebrations because they're not going to let the terrorists win. You know, you got to move on with your life, and we have to address this. Absolutely, we have to address it, but it also, it doesn't mean that we shut down, either. So, we're still doing our thing. And it's Guy Fawkes Day. All right. From David Laws. 80s nostalgia is big again. What from then are you really not looking forward to seeing mined for this trend? Ugh. Yeah, all right. Let me tell you. Last night we went out to buy some pants. I needed some new jeans, so I got some new jeans. My son Elijah, who is 14, also needed some new jeans. And he got some cool ones. They're nice. It took a while. He had to try on like 10 pair, and he wasn't very happy about that. But he did pretty well. He was a trooper. But while we were there, this is just at Shopko, all right? There are pairs that have the pre-stressed holes in the knees, the odd fading washing patterns on them, and then these like textured panels that were sewn in, like little corners underneath the pockets or a big panel right above the knee that, you know, it was a different material with an odd texture to it. And it was like, oh my God, I'm in Chess King and it's 1986. And this is, I mean, these were exactly the kind of pants that people I knew would have been shopping for in high school. And they're grotesque. And I remember the days when I thought they were cool. I remember thinking that those were awesome. The jeans, some of these fashions. I mean, seriously, when it comes to the movies and TV shows of the 80s and they keep bringing back and trying to remake different properties, I'm okay with all that. I mean, if it fails, it fails. So what? I don't really care that much. And some things like Stranger Things is some of the greatest 80s nostalgia I've ever seen. It is an awesome TV show. So there's really good stuff that comes out of it. But man, the fashions of the 80s, I know that we made a play for 70s fashion and bell bottoms came back in and some of these skinny fashions came back in and some of the, okay, that was fine. But 80s was really gross. Seriously, the big poofy hair, the shoulder pads, these stupid jeans. Oh my God, acid wash. Acid wash jeans. I remember when they had to be acid wash. Look, maybe you never went into a Chess King in 1986, but I am telling you, it's coming back, and that is really frightening to me. And maybe it's just Shopko, which is okay because we can't go to Shopko anymore. So after last night, we got done with the pants shopping, and now we're looking at rugs, and we're picking up some other stuff. And all of a sudden, someone that my wife knows comes and accosts us in the aisles. And she's like, oh my God, I thought that was you. And she comes over and she starts talking and it goes on and on and on. And it's a very long conversation. And it comes out towards the end of the conversation that, oh, the only reason she came out is because, well, she works there and she was in the back and she was watching on the security cameras and she saw that we were there on the security cameras. So she came on out to say hi. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I've always known that these places have security cameras. I know there's someone back there watching for shoplifters, but yeah, just don't tell me that you're watching me and don't let people be people that I know who are back there watching me. That's creepy. That's really creepy. I mean, seriously, how many times am I, you know, I think I'm alone in between the racks of clothes and I'm pulling the underwear out of my butt. I don't want people seeing that. I don't want you watching. Don't watch while my nose itches. So I'm saying you're picking my nose in the middle of the aisle. I think I have privacy here. Stop watching me, creepy people. That's just wrong. So, okay, we'll go back to Shopko eventually because shut up. I do. I was just scratching the inside of my nose. I wasn't picking it. God, So anyway, yeah, it's just creepy to know that someone you know, potentially, is just watching you all the time whenever you're in that store. How about that? Then also from David, if you have seen Thor, and I have, and haven't already covered it this episode, what are your thoughts? Look, I gave you the quick, I'm super excited, take on it at the beginning of the show. And I was going to cover it in full, but I didn't have a science fiction double feature. I didn't have another movie to pair with it, so I was going to just save it or skip it, whatever. But I'm telling you, it was really, really fun. That's all I can say. It was fun. It was Guardians of the Galaxy style fun, in that it was very, very nearly a straight up comedy with a lot of really cool action thrown in the middle. And I enjoyed the crap out of this thing. I think it was well written, well acted. The action scenes that they did have, watching Hulk and Thor go at it in the arena was stunning. It was what you want when you see two big bruisers go at it like this. Just amazing. And it was just cool. It was, like I said, they did really well with the Valkyrie, I think. It was a new take on the Valkyrie character, because I remember the old Valkyrie from the comics, from the Defenders is where I knew her from. It was Valkyrie and Gargoyle, and I can't remember who else was in that group at the time. I remember Valkyrie from there, and I always liked the character, but she was very straight-laced and very uptight, and this new Valkyrie has a backstory and some depth and is really cool. And I really like her. Banging on the mic here. But another thing that I liked about this movie is, they had these very strong, powerful female characters in Valkyrie and in, Hela. And at no point in this movie did they bother with any kind of romantic subplot. In any other traditional version of this film, it would have been very easy to try and pair up Valkyrie with Bruce Banner, or pair up Valkyrie with Thor, or, you know, some other combination of love interest going on. And we didn't waste time on that. It wasn't even in consideration. It was just, look, these are just people. These are all super powerful heroes who are working together. And man, it was a good time. It was just really cool. So, I highly recommend going to see Thor. It is popcorn style fun. The same kind of feeling I got the first time I saw Brendan Fraser's The Mummy in theaters, and how just phenomenally fun the whole thing was, beginning to end. Just rollicking action. So that's me. All right, and then he posts again. It says, "Stolen from work. Kids are joining the military today, who were born after 9/11." What will be this generation's version of 9/11, or the Challenger explosion, or the JFK assassination? That's a great question, and I don't have a good answer for it, because we haven't hit it yet. Whatever it's going to be, it's going to be huge, and I don't think we've hit it yet. It's not Trump. It's not. Although, look, is it possible? Is it possible that eventually Mueller's going to end his investigation? There's going to be some huge kerfuffle over impeaching Trump and the dramatic end to his presidency that could maybe mark, you know, some kind of milestone. It's possible, but, you know, how likely is that to happen? Who knows? We have no idea what it's going to be. We were just discussing generations with the kids, because even though, look, generational labels, while convenient as talking points and easy references, they don't mean a whole lot. I mean, they really don't. But we were talking about baby boomers versus Generation X versus millennials. And my kids ask me what generation they were. And I'm like, we haven't decided yet. You guys are going to have to get your own name down the line. So, said, look, we've been Gen X for a long time, me and your mom. But, you know, we got the name Gen X. And then when the millennials came around, oh, we tried calling them Gen Y, or we tried calling them a couple of other things, and none of it ever stuck until finally millennials. Don't know what the magic was about the word millennials, but millennials stuck, and so now that's who they are. So your generation is just getting to the point where they're, you know, you're gonna start seeing members of your generation reaching adulthood, and once you've got enough of them with adult lives, then you'll get a name for your generation, the post-millennial generation, whatever they are. But yeah, it's coming. It'll be a while yet. So, we'll know it when we see it, I suppose. So, all right. Next post. Oh, still from David. It says, I can never remember what questions you've already answered. Sorry if I'm repeating previous ones. You haven't. You're doing awesome. And then his last post, you listen to Common Sense / Hardcore History. Did you ever delve into Dan Carlin's forum? No, no, I never have. Is it exciting? Because, and which also, by the way, his last Common Sense sounds like it may be the last Common Sense for a long time. I think he, his commentary was simply that, oh, well, there'll be more Common Sense if he feels a need for it, but in the current environment, there's not room for this sort of discussion. And I think it was his way of taking the pressure off of himself, because I think he feels pressured to get Common Sense put out on a semi-regular basis. And since it's not working for him lately, I think this was his way of taking the pressure off and saying, look, I'll do it when I do it. And if nothing comes up for 6 months, then nothing comes up and just deal with it. So I think that's what we're going to see, is it's going to be, it might be a year before we see another Common Sense from him. But no, I've never gotten into his forums. I am kind of intimidated by the idea of it, because I imagine, that there's a lot of very heated discussion. I imagine that some of it is even pretty unhinged, because he appeals to the sensibilities of lots of different people. I know strong conservatives and strong liberals who find at least parts of Dan Carlin's message appealing. And because the libertarian defense of our personal freedoms is something that lots of people can get behind, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. Defense of personal freedom is a pretty big deal. And not wanting the government to trample on our rights is a big deal. And it's very appealing. So, I imagine his forums are, a wild place, but I don't know for sure. No, I've never been there. So, you will have to give me a report and let me know what I'm missing, or what I have missed in the past. So there you go. Oh, and then the last one's from me. Done. So, that's it. Love you guys. Thank you for showing up, and happy Guy Fawkes Day. It's been awesome.